Hi everyone, it's Miller from Menswear by a Woman podcast. Welcome to another episode. Today's guest, he's not even from London. I'm actually doing this, I haven't gone to New York, but I'm actually doing this with someone who's the most amazingly stylish menswear person out there at the moment. I've got to say, I just love the way he wears his clothes. Immaculate menswear. And he's the art director of No Chaser magazine. His name is Andre Armstrong. Hi, Andre, how are you? Am I saying your first name wrong?
No, you're good. You're good. Yeah, I'm well. How about yourself?
I'm good, thank you. I must say that you are dressed so well. So well. It's unbelievable how you are dressed.
Thank you so much.
So every time I see you on Instagram or other magazines,
you know,
amazingly dressed.
I appreciate that.
You know, so
I appreciate that.
I think, like all of us, we would like to know: were you always dressed this well?
You know, it's funny because for me, I think my style has been an evolution over the years. I think the older that I've gotten, the more that I've gotten to a groove of like who I am and what works for me.
Yeah.
You know, I like to think of myself as, you know, a classic guy in my approach to menswear.
Right.
For me, simplicity goes so far. I've never, or, you know, as I've gotten older, I've gotten away from being a guy that's gotten into trends. For me, it is sophistication.
Mm-hmm.
You know, building my style around things that I can look back on 10 years from now and still feel good about those things.
Wow. So who did you get inspired by, though? Who were you inspired by?
You know, for me, it's a number of people growing up. So I'm based in Philadelphia, but I actually grew up down south, the southern part of the U.S. in North Carolina.
Right.
So I've been, you know, I go from my mother to my uncles.
Wow.
You know, these people in my life really had a, it was very important. Presentation was very important. And just taking pride in how you look was very, very important. So even at a young age, I mean, I go as far back as 8 or 9 years old, like, at some point at Christmas, I was just like, hey, I don't want any more toys. I just want clothes. just give me clothes from this point on in my life. I don't want anything else. So it goes back to a young age. Like, I've been dressing myself for a long time. I think my mother at some point, she was like, hey, listen, like, you know what you want. Just do your thing. My mother had, was a huge influence in my life in terms of how I presented myself and, you know, kind of getting into fashion or this menswear world.
Right. So with the menswear world, what is it that about it that made you come into it?
You know what? I think the level of confidence I've seen in men who dress well.
Okay.
I think there's something to be said about when you have on the right pieces and you feel good in your clothes. Like, it's just like, it just gives you this different level of confidence. Like, you move different, you speak different.
Mm-hmm.
And the level of oftentimes like respect that you get from people when they recognize a well-dressed individual. Like, I can't count the times of the doors that have been opened, you know, oftentimes based on the confidence that what you're wearing gives you.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, initially those were some of the things that kind of pulled me into the menswear world. You know, having conversations about musicians and things of that nature.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I look back on that older generation and just like how they presented themselves and just the level of just like style and taste that, like, even sometimes today I'm just like, it just can't be matched.
With the style from the past, when I look at your style, right, I actually think of jazz players.
Right?
Miles Davis, these guys. I always think of Miles Davis, John Coltrane, all of these guys.
Oh yeah, for sure, absolutely. You know?
And it's really amazing, right? I think it's a huge part of menswear, the way these guys used to dress, and it's that influence that I can see with you know, the generations of menswear crowd. Do you think that is, like, I mean, the reason why I say that, because my father used to dress like that as well, like Miles Davis way and all that. And I see it more and more coming back. Do you think that's the case, or do you think, no, it's just certain people are doing this, bringing it back?
Yeah, you know what? I think it's a combination of both. Right. I think with social media, there's a piece that we're at in menswear where I think oftentimes, or maybe not oftentimes, but in some cases, like, you see men who get dressed for the camera.
Yeah.
Or to be seen. And oftentimes, like, it doesn't feel like it comes from an authentic place. When there are other individuals where it's just like, this is a lifestyle. Like, this is what I do, whether the cameras are on or not. Like, this is who I am. And for me, like, those are the individuals, like, I tend to gravitate to, because there's just something pure about someone who, like, you recognize that this is in their DNA. Like, this is not for the cameras. This is not for likes. This is not for followers. Like, this is what they do. And I think for me, like, that's the difference between style and fashion. Mm-hmm. For me, like, when I think of fashion, fashion is just like, oh, okay, what's trendy, or what can I do to be seen? Yeah. But when I think of style, style is just, it's who you are, is how you move, is how you speak. The clothes are just a small part of that. So for me, like, there's a very, like, distinct difference, like, between the two. Like, me, I'm a follower of style.
Yeah.
That's what you want to see. I know my first time in Florence, busy, and I went to a Liverano event.
Right.
And I walk in and I see this gentleman, I mean, well dressed from head to toe, and he had his watch wrapped around his waist, his wristwatch wrapped around his belt loop. That was just like, now that's style. Like, you can't teach something like that. Like, you can't copy that. For me, like, those are the moments like that are the things that continue to inspire me and just keep me excited about being in menswear. Little things like that.
So, but we before the actual recording started, we was both talking about Miles Davis, how we're both inspired by Miles Davis as well. It's amazing how his style is still seen now as one of the greatest stylish men's. I mean, I see a lot of magazines still referring back to Miles Davis. What is it about Miles Davis that captures menswear so much, do you think?
I think it goes back to, I think, you know, when we talk about, like, musicians, especially Miles Davis, I think there was something just effortless about it.
Yeah.
Like, these guys, like, they did what was genuine to them. And again, like, I think it goes back not only to the clothing, but the way they move.
Yeah.
How they interacted with people, the way they would stand. Like, little things like that, it just amplified what they were wearing. So for me, like, I come from one of my younger years, I worked retail. So I dealt with a lot of men who come in who had money, spent tons of money on clothing. Yeah. But you can't buy taste. Like, you can't buy style. No. And I think when you look, it's just you can't do it. Like, you can't teach it. You can't buy it. I don't care how much money you have. I mean, oftentimes, like, we see it in the media, these successful people, they have money. But, you know, in my opinion, like, it just does not match up. You're like, what are they doing? Who's styling these people? Like, what's the problem? So my point is, like, you can't buy taste. And I think when we talk about people like Miles Davis, like, the level of taste that they had, the level of sophistication, mm-hmm. it just poured out through their clothing. I would assume like they're not wearing, you know, these expensive brands. And, you know, I think for them, it was just, it comes down to pure style.
Yeah.
And it just showed through the images. I think that's why now, like, people today, like, we still look back on individuals like that, because it's almost like we're chasing, like, how do we figure out, like, how do we get back to this Miles Davis way of life?
I know.
Again, like, if it's not authentic, then it's kind of like,
I know,
you can't do it. Like, we can't mimic that.
I know. I see it so much, right? That they're trying so mm-hmm. hard sometimes to go back to it. And it's just like, and right, you just right. feel like, oh, this is not working. Someone needs to tell right. them it's not working, right? You, that kind of style comes naturally. And when you try so hard,
it's
not working. It's not working.
And that's just not work. And not to mention he played the trumpet. He played the trumpet. So that, you know, that's cool with itself. So like, you got that, and he dresses well. Like, yeah, it's hard to top that. I wish I could play the trumpet or something. Like, but unfortunately, that didn't work out for me. So
as an art director in menswear,
mm-hmm.
how do you go about becoming an art director, and how do you start with the creativity side of it?
Well, wow, my journey getting to this point is it's a long journey. So I mentioned before, like, I started out in retail.
Yeah.
When I was younger, I went to school for fashion design initially.
Right.
So I've always kind of just been in this menswear space. Right. And prior to becoming the art director of No Chaser Magazine, I owned my own men's accessories brand. So we design and manufacture ties, pockets, wears.
Okay.
So we sold to a lot of the big department stores, Nordstrom's, a lot of men's specialty stores, things like that.
Right.
But I think for me, like, I like to think, like, I've just aesthetically, like, I've always had an eye for beauty. Right. And I think that along with my background in design kind of just really just kind of put me in a position to be successful in what I'm doing now. You know, part of what I do with the magazine is it's kind of, you know, once, you know, the information comes in and we're looking for new content and things of that nature, like for me, like my ultimate goal is how to, one, create something that flows from beginning to end throughout the magazine.
Right, yeah.
And two, something that's visually beautiful. Mm-hmm. Whether it be the photography, whether it be the layout, whether it be the touch and the feel of the magazine. My ultimate goal, like, coming on board, work with No Chaser Magazine, was to create something like when people pick this magazine up,
right,
it's something that they want to leave on their coffee table. It's something that they want to continue to flip through the pages and show people from the touch of the pages, from the cover, from the inside, designs of the inside and the photography, like bringing all of that together to create this overall just like piece of work. Like, I've always wanted people to look at the magazine like, wow, like creatively, like this feels like art, opposed to just another magazine they flip through to kill time.
It's so funny how you say kill time, because a lot of people do look at magazine to kill time. You know?
Right. It's just like, all right, I'm waiting. I'm just trying to just like count the minutes. Like, let me flip through the pages and not really look at the pages, but just let me keep busy by doing something. That's not what I wanted with No Chaser Magazine. For me, that was my ultimate focus when it came to the visual side of the magazine.
Was it difficult to actually go into as an art director?
I think it, I wouldn't say difficult, but it was definitely, a change of pace for what I was doing prior to that.
Right, okay.
It's funny because, you know, prior to No Chaser Magazine, working with the accessories, like for me, I was very hands-on. Everything was, I was touching fabric.
Exactly.
We manufactured in-house. I was dealing with retailers, stores, and things of that nature. So I was just kind of on a different side of things. But I think for me, like, being able to kind of translate that into what I'm doing now wasn't difficult because I feel like I've always been able to kind of see aesthetically, like, what looks good, whether it be the way we shot our product when we got the men's accessories brand, or, you know, our campaigns and things of that nature. It was kind of easy to take some of those tools and translate it to what I'm doing with art direction. Working in retail, you know, oftentimes, like, you're, whether it be you're doing displays for windows or merchandising, like, all of these things, like, it requires an eye to really create something aesthetically beautiful. So I was kind of able to take those tools and translate it into being an art director of the magazine.
With the magazine at the moment, it's, well, actually, let me go back to Pity. Because, you know, with Pity, it's when I went out the first time ever, I mean, when I saw what was going on in Pity, you know, the Italians know how to dress. They I know everyone's going to send me a message and say, how dare you say that? But it's true. The Italians know how to dress.
Yeah.
The Italian men know how to dress, even also the women. So once I was out there, I was quite shocked in a sense, because I thought, wow, I've never seen so many men dress so well.
Right? Yeah, for sure.
At the moment, how do you find it? I mean, because I see a lot of photography about the people going there, but I don't see much photographs of the actual brands who are out there.
Yeah, it's funny because I was having a conversation with someone a few days ago, because it was their first time there. My first time was actually right after COVID.
Okay.
So for me, like, my first Pity was completely different from the Pities of past. Like, it was very quiet. They were kind of like really just kind of testing it out and opening the door. So it was completely different for me.
Yeah.
Now I think I've been maybe 5 or 6 times now.
Right.
So it's kind of funny to see, like, how the ins and outs of how Pity works for some people.
Yeah.
I think you have individuals who come there to be shot. To be seen. You have some people who come there to actually go into check out the different vendors and build and work with brands. So it's funny how I see the combination of both.
Right.
So for me, it's just from the time that I started going until now, like, you know, oftentimes, like, sometimes it can be a fashion show. Sometimes it's like, listen, who can be seen the most and who can be shot the most? But I think for me and my experience, I've learned to, okay, hey, like, I need to have a balance of both, because it's an amazing opportunity to network. It's an amazing opportunity to be seen. Pity is great for all of those things, but it's important to take advantage of, like, what's inside of those doors.
Absolutely.
So for me, like, it's just really just like finding that balance. It's not a great investment for me to go to Pity and just stand outside, you know. Like,
it's not about that.
No, I love Florence is beautiful. I love it.
Gorgeous place.
It's a beautiful place, like, you can't go wrong, but there has to be some type of building while I'm there. Like, I have to be able to kind of connect the dots between both worlds, like, you know.
Absolutely.
Building those connections outside, you know people are hanging out for time, for things of that nature. But I also need to build those relationships with these brands, because ultimately, like, you know, that's our business. Like, how do we find new brands? Like, what's new for the magazine? Being able to really just, like, connect both of those worlds is kind of what I've learned over the years that I've been going so far. But, yeah, I mean, you know, it sounds like God just want to hang out. And no knock to that. Listen, if you feel like that's the best investment of your time and money to go and to hang out at Pity, like, so be it. But for me and like what we do, like we have to be able to kind of marry both of those worlds and have a balance.
Who's your favorite menswear brand?
Wow.
There's going to be a list.
I think, you know what? I'll say the first brand that comes to mind.
Okay.
And it may be common to a lot of people. But Ralph Lauren.
Okay.
And I say that because I don't know that anyone tells a story better than Ralph.
Right.
When I look at, it's almost like you're looking at a movie script. When you look at through some of campaigns that he puts together. And I'm just like, for me, like, it's like, though the clothes are amazing, the storytelling is what does it for me. So like that's always like the first brand that comes to mind, like Ralph. Like I don't know that anyone does it as well as he does. I mean, there are a lot of brands that have amazing clothing and, you know, the list goes on and on, but in terms of like being able to put those two things together, storytelling and having an amazing product, like it's for me, like it's tough to find any other. And there are a few brands that are based in the U.S. that are some of my favorites. A brand called Uncommon, which is based in Texas. Right. I kind of stumbled upon their brand a few years back. I love the aesthetic of their product. It's like they do an amazing job of just like combining, you know, something a little modern, but still keeping that classic fit. So yeah, but if we're talking like who's like at the top of my list, Ralph, like for me, it's just the storytelling alone, just like it's almost like unmatched.
So who's at the bottom of the list?
I don't know if I want to say the bottom. I don't know that I have a bottom, but I'll just stick with it. I'll stick with the top of the list to avoid hurting anyone's feelings.
So what's your favorite style of menswear? Like at the moment, what's your favorite style?
You know, I like the direction I see some of these brands going with in terms of like suiting the more
of a
relaxed fit. And kind of, you know, wider shoulders, like the bigger lapels. When I look at them, like you want to be comfortable in your clothing and you want to feel like you can move. I like that some of these brands are giving kind of like this oversized, like tailored look to their clothing. I know when I first started wearing suiting many, many years ago.
Yeah.
And I think as men got back into wearing like clothing, like you saw this really just like skin tight, like silhouette that I'm just like, and I can't lie, I was caught up in that trend at one point. but as you get older, also as your body starts to change, like listen. I can't, everything doesn't fit the same anymore. So like I need to learn how to change and evolve just a little. But yeah, it's funny because like I don't want to say the younger generation getting into menswear, but just people in general, how like there's this misconception between tailored clothing and just like super tight.
Right.
So I think people have this idea that like it has to, like I almost can't breathe. Like it has to fit super tight to be tailored. So I appreciate this more relaxed look that I see menswear going to. Like I think it's something that is very tasteful. It's very sophisticated. And it just looks good.
Right.
It looks good. Like it looks like, you know, someone told me like people who talk about, I just don't like wearing suits. I don't feel good in a suit. It's because they've never had the right suit before. Right. Like you shouldn't feel like you shouldn't feel constricted in your clothing. Like when you put a suit on, it's almost like you should feel like you don't even have a suit on because it fits you so well and moves so well with you. So, you know, to answer your question, I like the direction that I see these brands going with a little more relaxed look in their tailoring.
So in the States, right, is tailoring quite well known? Or like, is it a lot of guys wearing and a lot of women? Are they actually going out and going to tailoring houses and getting suits and just getting clothing being made to order kind of thing? Is that happening over there?
Unfortunately, in my experience, I would say no. I think what we have now is a lot of that I see is a lot of fast fashion.
All right. Okay.
So I think
that's quite sad.
I think there are very few people that I come across that appreciate the what goes into tailoring. I think people just kind of want it. How can I get the look? For the best price. How can I get the best look for the least price? And I think for me, like oftentimes that's what I see here. There are not a lot of fashion houses that you can go into here that I know of where you can just kind of have that experience. And I almost wonder, do people even want that anymore? It's kind of like, if I can get the look, why go through all the steps when I can just go here, get it off the rack, and essentially just keep it moving. So it's funny, like my first experience at Pitsy, that was just kind of like an eye opening experience for me, because I'm like, wow, like these people take pride in the craftsmanship of their clothing. I know my, and this is kind of not related to menswear, but my first time there, I picked up, it was kind of like a credit card holder. So anyway, there's this guy in Florence he's like fourth generation.
Wow.
And he uses the same tool that his great-great grandfather used to make these small leather goods.
Wow.
And what I took from that, it takes him like a month to create these small like business card holders. He does a number of other things, but my point is there's a process and there's a level of craftsmanship that goes into what he does.
Yeah.
And for me, just being able to experience something like that for the first time, because here, oftentimes you go to the store, you buy a wallet, and you keep going. But there, like, it was more the process and the craftsmanship that he took pride in. So for me, like when I pulled this card holder out, it's not only the card holder that I'm looking at the story behind it, and that. Kind of, it really just changed my perspective and my thought process when it comes to clothing and menswear. Because oftentimes being here, like you're not privy to that experience. Like we go into the malls, you go into stores, we buy what we need, but oftentimes like we're not able to have that experience. There's a bespoke tailor that is based in New York.
Yeah,
that we I did some work with him. Last summer, I was kind of documenting the process of creating this bespoke sport coat.
Right.
And just the level of just like love and craftsmanship that went into the work that he did. It's difficult to go back. Once you put on a garment like that, and I think if people were able to kind of have that experience, it would just change their perspective on how they buy clothing. For me, like, it's just like, give me the experience and the craftsmanship over anything. Like, I don't need a ton of pieces in my closet.
Yeah.
I want pieces that tell a story. Things that I can look back on and just like, wow, like I've seen this from the concept to the finished product. I just think people just don't have enough access to that here.
Right.
Okay. And I think if there are more places like that, more opportunities for people to kind of go in to have this experience, like I think you'd have a lot more people trying to take advantage of that.
I mean, the artisans and the craftsmanship that, you know, in a lot of these, I mean, even in UK, it's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
It's absolutely amazing you know, you appreciate it. You would actually appreciate it even more. Because and that's something that I think, and that's the beauty about it. When you hear stories like this, it draws you more into the brand. You know, it just draws so much into it, and you realize how much effort and how much they actually has taken them to come up with all this. Because with fast fashion, I mean, even here in UK, fast fashion, it's still around. I think it's a environment that we won't be able to get rid of very well, because a friend of mine actually said, which is, in a way, with the fast fashion, the way things are, and she works in sustainable fashion and all that stuff. And she actually said, see, if we kind of finish fast fashion, there are families who won't be able to be fed. So there's like one person who's working in this trade who's feeding like 7 members of families. And you realize that, you know, it's a horrible thing. It's a vicious circle. You know, it's such a vicious circle with fast fashion, because you think one person in either in India or Bangladesh or somewhere, or, you know, any part of South America or wherever, working in these factories, there's one person who's actually feeding a lot of members of their family. Now, if we stop that, they'd be starving. I'm not into fast fashion. And when she actually put that into my head, I realized, hold on a minute. Because if one person, if you take that all away from that person, that one person's feeding, I don't know, 5 or 6 members of their families. That one person is being depended on by their family. So how do you overcome that? How do you protect that? And how do you make it better, in a sense? You know, that's another podcast. I think that's another podcast that we have to go through.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. It's a difficult, subject.
Very touchy.
I think, you know, for me, like, when it comes to how I consume clothing or anything, I try just to be more intentional on how I buy and what I buy.
Exactly.
And for me, like, you know, oftentimes I'm just like, you know, what, I don't need an excessive amount of one thing, or I don't need anything that I'm going to wear for a couple of months and it's no good to me anymore. But again, like, I think that, you know, oftentimes it's just like people are in areas or situations where, again, like, they're able to kind of have this experience. I think for me, being able to travel a little more and see different things and meet different brands has kind of just like really just opened my eyes up to like how I consume, how I buy, what I like, and just have a deeper appreciation for people who still love the craft of what they do. It's funny because, like, when I was in my first time in Florence, we were having dinner was like 3 hours, and I'm like, why are these dinners so long? Like, why are we still here for 3 hours? Like, why is this steak taking like 5 hours to come out? But again, like, I'm hungry. Like, I'm used to, you know, you go to a restaurant, you order, your food comes right out 20 minutes, and then, you know, you're done in an hour. But it's funny because, again, like, the same love and passion they put into
food as well,
their clothing
and food.
You
as
see
well.
That with their food as well.
Exactly. Yeah. And that.
So again, like, you appreciate it.
That was so weird because I think after being at Pitti for a few days, right? This was so funny. I was craving for an Indian food.
You know, it's so funny, and I'll just tell you this. And I'm sure everybody will hear it. Cool. It was the same thing for me. Like, I was at like my tip day there. Like, I went to like McDonald's. I'm like, listen, I have to switch it up. Like, I'm at the pastas, the pizzas, the everything.
Oh,
like,
my God. And I was
just
craving
a burger from McDonald's.
I was craving for a curry. Honestly, I was like, and my friends who were with me, and they were saying, we're in Florence, one of the most beautiful cities, amazing city with the amazing food, and you want a curry? And it's like, you have no idea. And we found one, and we got there, and we had our curry, and it was just, I can't believe I'm sharing this on the podcast. So there I was in Florence having a curry.
My goodness. You know, That is so funny. Listen, it was surreal. Sometimes it happens. You gotta do what you gotta do.
Exactly, you know. And I have had McDonald's in Florence as well, and I know which McDonald's you're talking about. I know which one it is.
So, yeah, right.
I know which one you're talking about. Like, we was catching our train, so we thought. McDonald's or pizza.
I know the exact one. That is too funny. But I'm like, I broke down. I'm like, listen, I've had some amazing food while I was there. But I'm like, right now, I need to switch it up and just get this burger from McDonald's. So that was my last day there. But you know, again, like, it, you know, all the way around, like, I think, like, my first time there just really changed the way I just look at, you know, menswear as a whole.
Exactly.
And just, I've been able to kind of implement those things and just like what I do now. And it's just, I think that experience like really refined my eye just in terms of just like the brands that I work with, like from a creative perspective, understanding like this is like, you're creating like a work of art. So you take 100%. Those same ideals that that people have and you implement that into your work. And there's a level of patience and time and just like
100%.
Because for me, like when people look at that magazine, like that's an extension of who I am. Yeah. So that's an extension of my work. So when people look at that, I want them to have, you know, feel the same level of appreciation and love that I have for what I do. So that all kind of goes hand in hand.
So what do you think about menswear at the moment? Because there's so many branches of menswear. And how do you feel about it now? Like,
I mean, I appreciate the creativity. I appreciate, you know, brands are taking risks and kind of like, thinking outside of the box. So I appreciate that. You know, some things, you know, they may not work for me. But I appreciate people kind of, you know, experimenting more, just thinking outside of the box. Right. I think what I do worry about is, and I was reading this article a few months back, and they were talking about how luxury has lost its taste.
Yeah.
And how a lot of these high luxury brands, like the level of taste just isn't there anymore. Yeah. So you see these shows and these product that's coming out,
yeah,
and it's just kind of like wow, like where's the level of like sophistication? Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, it's you know, you get this wow factor when you look at the product, but it's kind of like is, for lack of better words, like does this make sense? Like, is this realistic? Like, are people wearing this, or is it just for shock value?
Yeah.
So for me, like, I think there's just like that fine line of just kind of like, is all this for show, or are we really creating something that connects with people? But I mean, again, like I enjoy people pushing the envelope, whether it works for me or not. Like, I enjoy seeing people kind of step out there and just kind of their take on what menswear is and them being able to kind of display that in their own way. So I don't think everyone needs to be walking around in a three-piece suit and Sean shoes. I mean, you know, that may work for me, but for somewhere else, you know, they may have a different approach, and they may have their approach may be a little different from mine, which I appreciate. And I think even like going to Pitsy, like being able to see like, some of the men that show up there, it's like there's some guys that stick out, and I'm like, every time I see them, like, it's almost like they never miss. It's like they have their own approach, but they do it so well. And again, I'm able to kind of take that, and that inspires me creatively. And I think that's the beautiful thing about menswear, like whether it works for us or not. I think sometimes like we're able to take bits and pieces from others and kind of implement that into what we do. But yeah, I mean, you know, to answer your question, like, I think that, you know, we're in that fine line where, you know, I think menswear is just kind of like, sometimes it's like, this is a little too crazy. But, you know, again, like you have some people really pushing the envelope and really being a little more innovative and inspiring the next generation to do something a little different.
The last question, Roy, I hope, well, I always say the last question and then another one comes up in my head and then I ask another one. So it's never ending in my head at the moment with questions. What would you say to someone or any of the brands who are starting up in menswear?
I'm sorry, repeat that one more time.
What would you advise them and what would you say to them, to any brands that are starting up in menswear at the moment? What advice would you give them?
I think what's important, yeah, that's a good question. And I kind of go back to when my business partner and I started our brand. For us, what's important is to be authentic to yourself. You can never please everyone.
No.
Don't get caught up on trends. Don't get caught up on what anyone else is doing. I think what's important is to find your lane and find what works for you. And I think once you do that, you're not chasing what everyone else is doing. I think organically, like, things start to build. Things start to fall in place. Because if you're chasing what other people are doing and trying to build that around your brand, oftentimes, like, it never works. You have to be true to what you do, you know, whether it be clothing, whether it be food, whatever type of business that you have, like, be authentic to that. And I think from that point, everything else starts to fall into place. But I think that's number one. Create what makes you feel good.
Yeah. Is that number two?
I think, you know what, for me, like, I think with the business, I've been an entrepreneur for since I was in my early 20s.
Yeah.
So I understand, like, with being authentic to yourself, like, you have to understand also, like, you have to be flexible. Things oftentimes don't go as planned. But I think as long as you continue to stay genuine to what you're doing, it's easier to kind of adjust when things don't go as planned. This is a completely different conversation, but when we're talking about entrepreneurship and building brands, like, I was on that side for over 10 years.
Yeah.
So I understand what it means to being able to wear, you got to wear different hats. Like, there are things that unexpected things that happen that you just don't account for. Mm-hmm. So that's why I think, my number one advice is to be true to your product.
Yeah.
I think once you have that core, like, it's easier to kind of adjust along the way because, like, you have a goal in mind. Like, you know exactly what you're trying to build.
100%.
You know exactly who your customer is.
Yeah.
So it's easier to navigate once you have that down. But I think the second part to that is just being able to be flexible and just understand, like, hey, like, things are going to shift. Things are going to move around. Everything's not going to go as planned. This timeline may not stand, but if I'm being true to who I am and what my product is, it's easier to kind of navigate around that.
That's brilliant. Thank you so much, Andre. Absolutely.
You're
100% sure.
You.
It's 100% what you said was absolutely correct. You have to be true to yourself and true to your product. Otherwise, there's no reason for doing it. No reason in doing
absolutely. I really appreciate you talking. It sucks because, you know, it's so funny because I was like, I had plans to come to London.
Oh, wow.
While I was after a pity, but it just did not work out. I was like, before I reach out to you about COVID, I was like, let me make sure I'm coming first. But unfortunately, it didn't work out. But my plan this summer is once I wrap up a pity, to come to London. So, you know, hopefully we get the opportunity to connect face to face.
Oh, definitely. And, you know, just continue this conversation. Definitely. And on that note, Andre, I'd just like to say thank you so much. It's been an absolute amazing and an honor to have you on to my podcast, Menswear by Women.
Likewise. The pleasure's all mine. Thank you
amazing.
So much.
Thank you so much for coming on board. Thank you.
Have a good one. Thank you.